Can see you well. Okay, very good. I will try to talk like that. So my topic is quantum repeaters, which I think is an exciting topic right now because things are starting to come together a little bit so that we can really see that maybe in the not too distant future we will actually be able to do something. And I will define what I mean by doing something in a moment. So I will first motivate a little bit why we might need quantum repeaters. Then I will talk about quantum repeaters with atomic ensembles, which is sort of the classic, maybe, way of doing quantum repeaters. In this context, I will particularly focus on solid-state atomic ensembles because that's what we were doing in Geneva and because they allow you to make these multimode quantum memories in a very efficient way, which I will explain what that is in a little bit. But then I will also talk about repeaters with trapped ions, and there I got really lucky that Chris Monroe was talking just before me. So that will seem quite familiar to you by then. And I will explain why that might be an attractive idea. So why quantum repeaters? So the goal is to do long-distance quantum communication. You may have different reasons for wanting to do that. One could be, you know, just to see how far entanglement can go. But of course, it's also important for applications as quantum cryptography or if you want to make a quantum computer network or something like that. The problem is this. Transmission losses are enormous. In a way, of course, optical fibers are great, right? You can have kilometers and kilometers of a crystal in this cable, and you have very little loss. Okay? So in a way, that's quite amazing. But of course, if you go to really long distances, it still adds up. And for example, if you have 1,000 kilometers of fiber at the optimal wavelength, which is 1.5 microns, you still have a transmission of 10 to the minus 17. So that means if you wanted to distribute entanglement with a 1 gigahertz source of photons or something like that, it would take you 3 years for 1,000 kilometers. And you cannot, whereas in classical telecommunication, you just put amplifiers from time to time, you know, every 200 kilometers or so under the sea, there's an amplifier, actually. That, of course, doesn't work in the quantum case because of the no-cloning theorem. And a potential solution are these quantum repeaters. For those of you who have never heard this before, let me briefly explain it. So the idea is that I will, you know, this is my large distance, 1,000 kilometers or more, and I'm going to divide it up into little segments. I'm going to create entanglement independently in each of these segments. And once I have entanglement in neighboring segments, let's say here or and here, then I'm going to do entanglement swapping. And so on, in a hierarchical fashion. Once those two are ready, I do entanglement swapping here, then I have two longer pairs. And once I have these two longer pairs, then I do entanglement swapping here, and I continue like that. And it's, I don't know whether it's obvious, but one can show quite easily that this scales a lot better. You know, if every individual link here has a transmission of t, then the time that you need in order to send entanglement directly all the way through these n links goes like 1 over t to the n, whereas for this repeater architecture that I just outlined here, you have a prefactor, but the basic scaling with this transmission is like 1 over t. So this is much, much, much better. Now, of course, you need a lot of things, a lot of capabilities for that. You have to be able to create entanglement in a heralded way. You have to be able to store it because, you know, I'm doing it independently. So if I succeed here, I have to store it until I succeed here and so on at all levels. And I have to be able to do this swapping. Okay? Now, maybe the most famous scheme, or the one of the oldest, is this DLCZ scheme. Stands for Duan, Lukin, Serac, and Sora, which was proposed in 2001. And there, the basic ingredients were atomic ensembles and linear optics. I'm not going to go into the details, but let me tell you that the idea is that your quantum memories are atomic clouds of atoms, and you're going to entangle them through the detection of a single photon in between. So these two clouds could be quite far apart. That would be the idea, maybe hundreds of kilometers apart. You have these photonic channels, and here you detect a single photon in the middle, and in such a way that you really don't know, you know, fundamentally you can't know whether it came from the ensemble on the left or the ensemble on the right, and this is going to create entanglement between these two. That's the basic building block. And then they also showed that in a similar way, once you have two pairs of entangled ensembles like that, like one pair here and one pair here, then you can also swap this entanglement in the same way, again, by detecting a photon in the middle. And what was nice about these ensembles was that they allow you, because you have sort of a collective interference effects, you know, the emission of the atoms from in this ensemble all interfere, you can reconvert stored photons into flying photons in an efficient way. And this is where the fact that you have lots of atoms helps you. Now, this scheme, this TLCZ scheme, was very influential on the experimental side. This was proposed in 2001, and then there were quite a lot of impressive experiments. And then after a while, the theorists started to notice that and like thought about it a little more and came up with various improvements. And so the motivation for the improvements will become clearer in a little bit, but essentially it was that the scheme is nice, but it's still too slow to really be practical. So people, like, you know, I'm not going to go through all this list, but especially in 2007, there was kind of an explosion of activity of various ideas how to make this better. Okay? And in particular, these ones were from Geneva. These were from other groups, like in Harvard and in Heidelberg and so on. Let me show you the... So there's different ways of improving it. There's different ways of creating entanglement with like two photon detections. There's ideas about multiplexing. I will particularly speak about temporal multiplexing in a little bit, where we have a proposal that I think is quite promising. There's ways of combining this with single photon sources to improve the efficiency and so on. So there was quite a... And here we have a recent review paper here on the archive that compares all these things now. And the kind of plots that we show are like that. So this is distance, and this is the time required to make a single entangled pair, okay, for all these various schemes. So this plot A here is the time that you need if you just send the photon directly. This is where the 10 to the minus 17 for the 1,000 kilometers that I had at the beginning. So you see that, of course, this scales quite badly. You know, once you are for 500 kilometers, you still need maybe a second for a reasonable source, and then you go up very fast. Now, all the repeater protocols are, of course, have much better scaling than that, for the reason that I mentioned before. You know, the curves are much flatter. However, you also see that almost all of them, you know, like the TLCZ, for example, is curve B here. Okay? You see that, okay, so you can really outperform direct transmission, but you do it in a region where, you know, the time to create a single entangled pair is already 100 seconds. So that means that you need your quantum memories to store entanglement for such a time. Okay, because otherwise your repeater doesn't work at all. So that's kind of unfortunate. You know? And that provided the motivation for all these improved schemes. And you see that, you know, the improvements, you really go down. You know, these people here weren't crazy. They improved it in a different way, you know, in terms of robustness. But anyway, so on the whole, you know, you go down. But you don't go down very, very far here. Apart from this curve here, and this curve here is a multiplex. So I want to explain, you know, how to go down here. So this is a 100-fold multiplexed version, essentially, of the TLCZ protocol. And I will show you in a moment how to do this multiplexing, according to me. And there, at least, you know, with this factor of 100, you really go into the one-second range here. So here we think that maybe, you know, because I will also in a moment say that the memory lifetimes are really quite good now in some systems. So this is really a point that maybe we can achieve, you know, pretty soon, I would hope. I should say that this is assuming 90% memory detection efficiency. I will come to that in a moment. But let me talk about multiplexing a little bit before. So the idea here is essentially that if you have memories that can store trains of parses, then you can do a lot more than if you have memories that can just store single photons. So the idea is, again, I won't go into the details here, but these are photon pair sources. And like usually what you would do in order to create entanglement is you would trigger these photon pair sources, and then here you would wait for a detection or two detections depending on the scheme. And then you would know, you know, because the partners of the photons went into these memories, then you would know that these memories are entangled. Or you would know that you failed, because most of the time your photons are going to be lost here in transit, and you would have to start again. And this waiting to learn whether your entanglement creation was successful, you know, for the signal to come back from this central station to your sources, that takes a long time, in fact. If you have long distances, that takes quite a long time. So what you want to do is somehow be able to continuously, you know, to continue to try, but that means that you have to store all the photons that you are creating here. So here you would like to have a memory that can store all these photons, and then in the end you're going to pick out the ones that actually, whose partners photons led to a successful detection here in the middle. That's the basic idea. But even if you didn't quite follow that, you know, I think it's quite intuitive that if you have a memory that can store, you know, trains of parses, you can somehow speed up things. Okay? Maybe you should just believe me that. Okay, that went kind of fast. So there's different ways of making, so I get 2 minutes more. Okay, cool. So there's different ways of making these multimode memories. I should say that for the standard photon echo techniques in these solid state systems that we are interested in have already demonstrated storage of thousands of modes, in fact. But, you know, parse trains of thousands of parses, but these are not in the quantum regime, and there's fundamental reasons why they are not. However, one can invent sort of modified photon echo type protocols, and the one that we like particularly is called this atomic frequency cone protocol, which is very efficient, where we think that very high numbers of modes can be achieved. So I clearly don't have time to explain this in detail. But that's not really a problem, because Nicolas Gisin will talk about that on Thursday, and he will even show experiments on these atomic frequency cone memories. Let me just say that we think that this should really allow to store, I mean, not this year and not next year, but in the foreseeable future, I think this should allow to store hundreds of modes on a timescale of seconds. Okay, so one other thing I wanted to show you was this. Like, how good do these memories and detectors really have to be for quantum repeaters? And there in this review paper, we draw plots like this. And the conclusion is essentially that they have to be, you know, very good, but it's not quite as bad as you may be used to from quantum computing, say. So here I'm saying a 1% drop in efficiency costs about, let's say, 10% in repeater rate. So you want to be probably in the 90% range, which is what I used in my examples before, you know, the kind of numbers I used in my examples. Now, the status quo right now is about 50% for certain types of memories and about 60% for others. But so we are not that far from this. So let me just flash the thing about the ion traps that I promised. Because you saw that even here for this multiplex scheme, you know, I'm still here in the second range for 500 kilometers. So if I want to go to 5,000 kilometers, clearly I still have a problem. So how can you go further than that? And my claim is that, for example, you could go further than that with quantum repeaters based on trapped ions. And there I'm very happy that there was Chris Monroe just before. You know, he has already shown this ion-ion entanglement. Now, you would also clearly need efficient coupling to the cavity. But the key ingredient is that you can do deterministic operations once you have created the entanglement. That's what he said before. You know, once the entanglement swapping steps you could do, deterministically, and there you gain orders of magnitude again. And I think you could even do multiplexing in these systems as well, based on these ion transport techniques that have been developed in the context of quantum computing. And I don't want to go into the details on this anyway, but we had a paper on that recently in PRA. So let me do my outlook. So I'm expecting great progress on these multimode memories and on the experimental side, I think, and Nicolas Gisard will talk about that more. I think there will be basic repeated demonstrations with such memories in the foreseeable future. It will take a little longer to really make something useful, of course, as usual, but it doesn't seem out of the question at all. An interesting thing is that one might be able to use these solid-state memories also, because you have all these modes stored in there and you can do linear optical operations on them, so you might be able to do some more general forms of information processing in there as well. And it's also interesting to think whether you could do deterministic entanglement swapping for ensemble-based memories, you know, similarly as you do for the trapped ions, but that's more still more an open question. And graduate student applications are welcome if somebody wants to come to Calgary, which is a very nice city. And finally, let me just thank my co-workers in Geneva and Paris who contributed to this. Thank you.